NASA announced last week that one of its astronauts, Christina Koch, will be spending almost a year aboard the International Space Station, making it one of the longest space flights ever. Scientists at NASA will be using the trip to monitor Koch's physical well-being, adding to a growing amount of research on how the human body holds up in space. Megan Bartels is a senior writer at space.com. Megan, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me on.
All right, talk about Christina Koch. She's already up there on the International Space Station. She's having her stay extended now to 11 months. How does that stack up with your average everyday space station visit?
Well, it's a lot longer than an average stay. The visits tend to be about 6.5 months, and she'll be up there nearly 11 months. I think her current schedule has her clocking in at 328 days. And that will make her the NASA astronaut with the second longest single stay after Scott Kelly, who was up there for 340 days. And it will make her it'll make her the worldwide record holder for the longest female astronauts.
And there are a lot of unanswered questions, right, about what it's like for us humans to be up in orbit. What are some of the main biological question marks?
Sure. So it's really a matter of there are some symptoms that people have noticed, but they're not sure exactly how those play out. So there are some big concerns like losing bone density and losing muscle definition. And there are some known effects on cognitive performance, but it's really unclear how that translates the longer and longer you stay up there. And even looking beyond low Earth orbit, if you're thinking about trying to go to the moon or going to Mars, that brings up a whole new set of questions because there's a lot more radiation out there. Astronauts on the space station are exposed to more radiation than they normally are here, but they're still a little bit sheltered. Once they leave low Earth orbit, it gets worse.
And you mentioned Scott Kelly being up there for 340 days. Now we've got Christina Koch. Is there a thought that, hey, maybe men's bodies and women's bodies might react differently to prolonged periods in orbit?
That's definitely something that doctors I've spoken with have wanted to look into. So a lot fewer women have flown in space overall than men, which makes comparisons a little bit difficult. But there are a few factors where scientists have noticed differences between how sexes respond to space flights. So for one common issue is that women tend to faint more when they get back to Earth, which seems to have something to do with how their artery system responds to being in microgravity for so long and then coming back and having Earth gravity again. And another difference that people have already sort of started to notice is that both men and women, their eyes change. You can see it in scans of their heads while they're in space. But then when they get back, men seem to have more trouble actually with their vision, whereas women, it seems to be a little less of a symptom, but they still see the effects in the scan. So they're not sure exactly what's going on there.
How well are scientists and doctors able to sort out, this is something that happened to Scott Kelly in orbit or something that we'll find out happened to Christina Koch in orbit? How much of that is them as individuals versus this is what happens to people, any people in orbit?
That's really one of the big questions because there are so few people who have flown in space. There are so few people who have flown for long periods of time. There are three NASA astronauts so far who have stayed longer than 200 days in orbit. Christina Koch will be the fourth. But yeah, it's really difficult for them to know. They're never going to be able to do as large of a controlled trial as you would do for something more mundane, something on Earth. So it's really hard to pick that apart. And so the more flights you can get up there helps, but there's always going to be some level of questions to that, I think.
You mentioned we were going to say Mars, we'd be exposed to more radiation, but also that's a much longer trip than even this almost a year we're talking about. What kind of time spans are we talking about if we're going to Mars?
People tend to give that sort of a 2.5-year time frame because it takes a while to get there, and then assuming you want to do something once you get there, and then it takes a while to get back here. So 2.5 years is usually sort of the default time frame people give, but of course it could go a little bit either way.
Talking to Megan Bartels, senior writer at space.com, about spending a lot of time in orbit or beyond and what impact that has on the human body. And we mentioned, Megan, that Christina Koch found out that she was going to have this longer stay while she was already up there on the space station. Do we know her reaction to that news?
Well, she did know it was a possibility before she went up, so it wasn't totally sprung on her. But the
official confirmation, from
what we know, did come after she was already home.
But she is on board with this idea. Not that she may have much choice in the matter.
Yeah, no, she seems very excited in the interviews that she's done since the announcement. She seems really thrilled to have the extra time up there.
Now, getting back to Scott Kelly, who holds that longest spaceflight record, he had this unique situation where he has a twin brother, and they were able to do some before and after comparisons, one in space, one clearly not. What kind of things did we learn from that?
Sure. So, coincidentally, the findings from that just came out the week before they announced Christina Cook's long stay, so it's an interesting turn of events. But the Scott Kelly, Mark Kelly situation was really interesting because they did have this identical twin here on Earth, so they could actually look at, in a nearly identical genome, they could look at the actual expression of genes as the long mission progressed, so they could see what genes were being expressed more and what genes were being expressed less while Scott was up there, and then how that changed when he came back. So there were definitely some, they noticed some questions in mitochondrial gene expressions and some signs of immunological stress, in addition to some sort of more standard, less genetically based signs of spaceflight. So sort of because you don't have gravity, your fluid moves around a lot, and that can cause your body to do weird things. For the most part, all those factors went back to normal by about 6 months after he got back. But still lots to be learned.
Now, in the public imagination, or I'll speak for myself, in the way I think of space flight, I guess I've thought of it as, an engineering challenge. It's physics and chemistry and the math. I should have been thinking more about the biology all along, it sounds like.
Well, fortunately, other people have. People
Good.
Have always been really curious about how human bodies respond to space flight. So.
And does that go back quite a ways to earlier missions?
Yeah, so all along, basically as soon as NASA was looking at human spaceflight, there were doctors involved sort of trying to figure out what they wanted to know from spaceflight and how they wanted to try to screen astronauts who might have conditions that became problematic in space.
And I want to spend our last couple minutes on another story that you wrote, kind of related. Christina Cook now, as you said, will be the woman spending the most time in space in human history. You recently wrote about Jerry Cobb. She was the first woman to pass the equivalent of NASA's pre-flight space test. She passed away last month. Can you tell us some about what she accomplished and the doors that she may have opened, even if she didn't always get to walk through them herself?
Yeah, of course. So she was a very accomplished pilot in the late 50s and early 60s. And so in 1960, when these doctors who were working with NASA to sort of try to figure out how to find people who could handle spaceflight and how to test them and what to look for when they were up there, they reached out to her because she was a very, very well-known pilot. She had broken several records and was very talented. So they reached out to Jerry Cobb and asked her to take those same tests that they had set up and created for NASA. They didn't do that through the auspices of NASA. They did it as a private project. But she agreed. She passed all the tests with flying colors. And then she also went through the pilot records of the U.S. to find other women who seemed like they were talented enough that it made sense to have them take the test as well. She found 25 of them and to talk into taking these tests, and 12 of them passed. So there was, over the course of a few years, this group of 13 women came together who were qualified to fly in space and had passed these physical tests that people thought ought to qualify them to make a space flight. NASA never quite got on board with this project, but Jerry Cobb did a lot of lobbying, including in Congress. She eventually testified in Congress in 1962 about sort of this practice and really pushing against this NASA decision to not fly women at such an early point. That never made a whole lot of progress, and the Soviet Union sent the first woman into space in 1963. So sort of by the mid-60s, she had backed away from this. But it's really, it's particularly striking because it does come before sort of the coalescence of the second wave of feminism, which would have really helped her and backed her up. And it came before sex discrimination was illegal. So testifying in Congress about this was a really big deal, and getting them to listen and to really see this as a potential problem was a big accomplishment.
And you write that a lot of people nowadays, scientists, those in the space program, look at Jerry Cobb as an inspiration, right?
Oh, definitely, yeah. The first female pilot of the space shuttle program, Eileen Collins, she piloted the shuttle in 1995. And when she was getting ready to launch, she reached out to these women and organized to have a bunch of them attend her launch on site because she really thought they had helped pave the way for her own flight.
Megan, thanks a lot for sharing your reporting with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Megan Bartels, senior writer at space.com. She's with us to talk about how NASA is researching the impact of prolonged space flight on the human body.